Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, thanks for your well wishes. Still a little under the weather, but hey, evil doesn't take a day off, and neither can we. And we are on the road in Studio B, but you'll never know the difference. And finally, after all these years of knowing what we've known, I've got a guest who can talk about how much Biden's not or was not in charge. And I'd like to explore some possibilities of this too, because I think there's criminal behavior there. And we're going to look at what some of the insiders are having to say with our guest, Max McGuire. But before we go there, I have to let you know we're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And ladies and gentlemen, the left is doing everything they can do to make it impossible for Trump to govern. And that includes destroying the financial system. Your bank account is at risk because of Dodd-Frank 2010. Little known law says you're number two. They can keep it, and they can keep your retirement. That's devastating. Noble Gold can extract your retirement from the bank, put it under your control, back it with precious metals, and all they do is educate. You got to close your own deal. I know, because I've been a customer of Noble Gold for over 7.5 years, multiple times. I can't recommend this action strongly enough. Protect your nest egg. Go to DaveHodgesGold.com. That's DaveHodgesGold.com, and I will send you out a free information packet with Noble Gold's number on it. But they are exacerbating. Robert Kiyosaki was out this morning saying banks in big trouble. We're seeing it across the board. Don't sit on this. DaveHodgesGold.com. Well, our guest is a political commentator, and I'm going to bring him on and have him talk about his background a little bit. He's written a number of books and catchy titles. Wow. I mean, I'm impressed. But we really want to focus in this discussion about how we've been deceived for how long. An oligarchy ruled behind the scenes. Unacceptable. Max, welcome to the show. Glad you could be here. I've heard a lot of good things about you from some of my colleagues. What prompted you at this point to come out against the shadow presidency?
Oh, I've been against this from the beginning, right? I mean, anyone with a pulse and two eyeballs has been able to see what's been going on. I mean, the idea that Joe Biden has only become demented. I mean, that's what he has dementia. Let's use the other root of the word. He's demented. I mean, back in 2015, 2019, 2020, he was campaigning in the first in the nation primary in New Hampshire, and he thought he was in Vermont. I mean, this is stuff that's been going on for a long time. This is a guy who's had the top taking off of his head a couple of times for brain surgeries. I mean, it's been obvious. And what has been really interesting to see the rats fleeing the sinking ship starting to turn on him and admit what we've all suspected all along, that he wasn't actually the one calling the shots. I think when the history books are written, it will be shocked to see just how little he actually did as president. And just how much he either delegated to other people or was done behind his back by people in his administration that thought they knew better.
Yeah, I had mentioned to you in our pre-air discussion, I had seen an interview with the donor Lindy Lee, spelled L-I on the end, and she was apologetic the whole time, but she basically said, he's never been in charge and we've known it. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, she is coming from a really unique position that she was a fundraiser, and she was a bundler, someone who was building a lot of these fundraising dollars together for the Harris campaign, the Biden campaign, and their super PACs. I mean, I was telling you before we came to air just a couple of weeks ago, my 4-year-old accidentally threw out a dollar bill, and I was pretty angry. Now imagine that times a billion. That's what the Democrat donors are feeling right now. Like, oh, we gave Biden and Kamala Harris over $1 billion, and this is what they did. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of legitimacy behind her frustration. Not only did she give that money, but she was basically lending her credibility to her friends and her acquaintances. Hey, this guy's got it. Donate to him and Kamala. And it was all sham. It was all a lie.
You know what's amazing to me, because this just speaks to widespread ignorance. How could anybody look at the past behavior politically of Joe Biden, his racist comments, just among many, his inappropriate behavior with girls and women in public? How could anybody look at this and think that this guy should ever be in public office? How could you donate to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the beginning, people understood that he wasn't going to be a president per se, but he was going to be the not Trump option. I think going into 2020, people understood that this guy is over the hill. I mean, his best decisions, if he ever had any, were long behind him, right? And they were electing him not because of what he would do, but because of who he would bring to Washington, D.C., and who he would install in these positions of power. So I think there was an understanding among Democrats that they weren't actually getting Joe Biden. They were getting the cabal around him, right? What I don't think they realized was the ineptitude of the people around him and the quickly deteriorating mental state that Joe Biden's been undergoing. I mean, anyone, me, you, anyone of your listeners or viewers who's experienced a family member or friend getting dementia or Alzheimer's or mental decline, we all know what that looks like. We all know what it feels like to take the keys away. And this nation gave, I put a little asterisk next to gave, depending on how you think about the 2020 election, gave this guy the nuclear codes when they should have been taking away the keys, should have been taking the knobs off of the stove to make sure he didn't burn down the house. So we all knew it. I think the donors were willing to say, okay, well, yeah, he's not really going to be the guy calling the shots. And I think they were shocked to see just how bad he was.
Have you looked into, I'm sure you have, who is or was calling the shots?
It's interesting. I mean, there's these don the donor class, obviously. You know that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are behind the scenes. I mean, we're going to learn a lot more. The books are going to be written. They're already writing them, right? They're just waiting for the end of this to release them. They always are written after administrations. The books will be written, the tell-alls will be written, and we'll find out everything. What I think is really interesting is, for I think the first time in my memory, not only did the sitting president of the United States just resign during election rather than face the challenger, but we just had that happen today in Canada too. And I think it's really
Yes.
interesting. You have two leading politicians, leaders of massive countries, rather than going forward and running for re-election, and hey, maybe they lose, they're both forced to bow out. And it makes you wonder. It's made me rethink how I view politics, because we view the president of the United States as the most powerful man in the world. It's very obvious that he wasn't the most powerful man in the world. If he was the most powerful man in the world, he wouldn't have dropped out of the race and he would have just ran, right? And I think we're seeing it with Trudeau in Canada to a lesser extent as well. It makes you wonder who is calling these shots, whether it be the donors. I think we just saw George Soros get the Medal of Freedom. So, I mean, I think at some point they're going to tell you who these people are by who's getting the participation trophies at the end. But there are these people pulling the strings for sure.
That's a good answer. I just when I take a 30,000-foot view of this, though, I go back to when Biden debated Mitt Romney in 2012 in the vice presidential part of the race, and I thought he had cognitive problems then. Now, I have a little bit of advantage. I mean, I've worked as a therapist. I taught psychology for years, postgraduate level. So, and I might be a little more in tune to seeing it. But it was obvious to me in 2012 he had real cognitive issues.
Oh, yeah. And watch that debate against today. That debate, if you compare it to today, makes him look like he was a genius, right? I mean, like, it's such a night and day comparison. Joe Biden just, I think it was yesterday or the day before, cursing out a member of the media asking about his age. I mean, that's something that happens as people
That's true.
decline. They reach for words that aren't there. They get angry. They get frustrated. They don't have their fastball. They're not able to do the things that they used to do. And understandably, they lash out and they get angry and they get a little bit violent, right? So we've seen that from him. And yeah, I think if you compared 2012 versus 1980s Joe Biden, you'd be able to say, oh yeah, this guy's gone. I mean, he doesn't even look the same. Look at all the facial reconstructive surgery he's had just since 2012. He looks like a completely different person. I mean, like, put aside the mental decline, I think there's a legitimate question. Is this even the same person?
Interesting you'd say that. I have people on my side of the fence, I don't have an opinion on this, that swear that's not Joe Biden.
I've heard that,
I
yeah.
don't have an opinion, but I'm just telling you, if you go back and you just look at his receding hairline in the 70s when he was a senator and look at him now, it looks like two different people.
That reminds me of the old the ship of Theseus parable. Like, if you have a famous ship and you put it in a museum and it starts rotting and you replace each board with new boards, is it still the ship of Theseus? I think that's a legitimate question for Joe Biden. if the hair is different, if the face is different, if the brain is different, is it still him, or is it just a compilation of parts? At this point, I don't think we'll ever know. But it's very obvious he's not the same person, at the very least,
Is,
figuratively, than he was in
but
2012.
in your opinion, is this an anomaly with Joe Biden, or has the office of the president been reduced to one of just a servant, shut up and sign the forms?
I think there was a major effort for that to happen. And I don't think it's unique to the Democrats. I think it exists on the Republican side as well. I think if you look back in Trump's first term, I hope he's learned the lessons from this. But there are a lot of times where he was kind of strong-armed, pressured by people like Lindsey Graham into doing things that he didn't want to do, that were against his political instincts, that were against his promises. So I think it exists on both sides, whether it be the donor class or whether it be the entrenched politicians who believe they know better. I think there's an effort on both sides to turn this into a rubber stamp, use the auto pen more than Trump's actual signature.
Let me share this anecdote with you. It's 2018. I'm speaking at a conference in Branson, Missouri, and I'm there with a real prominent Republican donor, billionaire, great guy. I'm with journalist Doug Hagman, and at that time, still in DHS as a supervisor, one of my broadcast partners, Doug Thornton. And we're sitting around poolside on a Saturday night, and we're 8 weeks out from the midterm in 2018. And I'm really concerned about the censorship could turn the House over to the Democrats. And I brought this up and I said, Section 230. And I think everyone now knows what 230 was. No one in that conversation knew what 230 was, including the donor, who's highly intelligent. And he put me in charge with one of Trump's advisors, not in charge, but in touch with one of Trump's advisors. So here we are poolside. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And I'm on the phone with this guy for 20 minutes explaining Section 230 and what Trump needs to do to stop the censorship so we can recover as much as we can. And he got it. He said he'll know Monday. Trump said something in the media the following Wednesday. So 5 days later, he publicly commented on it. And then nothing happened. Nothing happened. And then we went on to lose the MAGA lost the midterm and the Democrats won and censorship just got worse. I see this as a primary component for Trump. He has to deal with this on day one. Have you given any attention to this?
Yeah, I mean, Section 230, for any one of your listeners or viewers who doesn't know, it's basically the difference between whether a website operates like a public bulletin board or like an editorial section of a newspaper.
Correct.
So if they're going to operate like the editorial section of the newspaper and they're going to pick and choose what can or cannot be posted, then they are editorially liable for what gets posted. If they say, hey, we'll take it down or we'll allow it, then they're responsible. So that's dangerous for websites from a liability perspective. If you have illegal activity going on the website, hey, you're the editor. Obviously, you approve this. So, what Section 230 deals with is saying, hey, it's just a platform, right? It's just like the online equivalent of a bulletin board in the public square. They're managing it, but they're not responsible for what people post on that bulletin board. The social media companies want it both ways, right? They want the liability protections of the bulletin board while also being able to editorialize. They got to stop straddling the fence, and they have to make that stronger that, hey, if you're going to editorialize, you are responsible. And when things slip through the cracks, yeah, you are responsible. Or be a free speech platform. There's lots of issues like that, like things like right to repair. So common sense that you have farmers who can't even repair their tractors because John Deere says they don't technically own them. They're leasing the software. There are a lot of these issues that if just you got in a room and you just thought common sense and sat down with Trump and all these decision makers, you could get them fixed. But there's so many powerful lobbies and interests who will spend millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars to protect this, that it's always constantly being an uphill battle. So yeah, we got to put pressure on it on these issues and make sure that Trump and all of the people around him know that they're priorities.
Yeah, he just didn't get it in the first term. And thing is if you were the head of YouTube and you allowed child porn while you're censoring other people, you go to prison. I mean, this isn't just a fine. This is also criminal. Who do you think is the main enforcement agent going forward? Is it the FCC?
I mean, for things like that, it'd have to be DOJ, FBI, right? I
For
mean,
prosecution,
FCC,
yeah. But
yeah,
what about enforcement?
FCC, they're going to have to enforce this stuff. They're going to have to craft the rules. Those are going to take a while, right? The way they have to go into the Federal Register, the public comment period, it's going to probably be 6 to 12 months before anything can change. On day one, you could prosecute these companies, right? YouTube exercises extreme editorial control. I don't know if you've been on YouTube. I've been on
I'm a
YouTube.
victim.
It's it's next to impossible to stay on YouTube. You bring on a guest who says one thing about a COVID vaccine, boop, you're done. So they're going to exercise that editorial control, then yeah, they have to be held responsible. And the minute one of these executives gets perp walked, I think you'd see a major change in how the industry treats these platforms. But that would have to come from DOJ, FBI.
I really like I was a victim. I never had a strike, no demonetizations. I do all my dirty work here. We're on my own censor. And I woke up one morning, my channel was gone. The only thing I was discussing in the previous 2 days was the 60th anniversary of JFK's murder. And I said, I want the CIA files released according to the laws that have been passed. I didn't even go much further than that. Boom, I'm gone. I know it was a CIA hit. And YouTube keeps changing their reasons for not reinstating me. Dangerous conspiracy theories. What, asking for release of records is a conspiracy theory mandated by law? And then it changed to I was bullying and harassing. So little old Dave Hodges can bully the CIA. I mean, this is the crap that you deal with these people. And I'd like to see Trump on day one tell them in a speech, if you censor, we're coming after you for what's on your platform.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting, I never used to be a conspiracy theory guy. I would dabble in little things, like it'd be interesting, like thought experiments to think about. But you can tell what likely isn't a conspiracy theory and what's actually a conspiracy
Sure.
when the powerful interests come out and say, oh, no, you're not allowed to talk about that. Like, no one's out there shutting down channels for talking about Bigfoot, right? Or talking about the Loch Ness Monster, because there's no powerful interests who stand to gain, I guess, aside from the tourist traps around Loch Ness. There's no interest that stand to gain from perpetuating that or limiting that. The minute you start talking about the COVID vaccine or JFK assassination, all of a sudden you start saying, oh, no, you can't talk about it. Well, why? Why can't we talk about that? How can that possibly affect your bottom line to wonder about the JFK magic bullet, right? Or any of these theories that are out there. And when you realize that all these people are working together to stop you from talking about it, well, that's the definition of the conspiracy. Right? Multiple people conspiring together on this issue. So it interests me that whenever you see this attempt to tamp down, talk about conspiracy theories, it almost that in itself confirms the existence of a conspiracy, right? Because if there wasn't one, there wouldn't be people conspiring together, especially when you see it coming top down from the White House, conspiring to stop this discussion, stop that debate.
Well, there's a story that's breaking as we're speaking right now.
Uh-oh.
Graphica. I don't know if you're familiar with the company, but they are representative of deep state organizations like the Atlantic Council, and they have been caught accepting payment and direction from the Pentagon on who to censor. And they create censorship population maps. Have you seen this story yet?
I haven't seen that story, but I've seen the similar stuff. I mean, this was, unfortunately, some of this was happening under Trump, in the early days.
Right.
And I don't think Trump knew about it. I don't think Trump, if he knew about it, would ever have allowed it to happen. But you look at the history of this pr these pressure campaigns of putting pressure on platforms and companies to try and censor different stories. Some of that started under Trump. But yeah, I've seen some of this. I haven't seen this new story, but
Well, Max, this is
it
just
doesn't
breaking.
surprise me.
We're talking, this is not even 2 hours old yet.
Yeah, it
It's
doesn't
something I've
surprise
known a
me.
little bit about. I didn't know the company's name, but what shocked me was the depth of the Pentagon involvement. And then, of course, the Atlantic Council's headed by ex-7 CIA directors who concocted the Hunter Biden laptop cover-up story, Russian disinfo. So, I mean, this is what we're dealing with as a country. But they came out, and in the news release, they said they created population maps with user IDs to go after. And they said, well, it's almost all conservative. So to preserve the agenda, we have to go after all the conservatives. We know now that's true. But here's the timing. Max, this is what you're going to find interesting. 1 month after the outbreak of COVID is when they started doing business.
Oh, yeah.
1 month. 1 month. I
Yeah.
want to bring it to Biden for a second. Excuse me, Obama and Susan Rice. And I want to
Oh,
see
Susan Rice.
if you, Susan Rice has moved to Scottsdale. I live in rural northern Maricopa County, so I'm in the neighborhood, so to speak. And I know somebody that knows her pretty well that has become disenchanted. And I get to hear a few things. Let me tell you what I was told. It was Susan Rice and Obama that were largely calling the shots. And they were doing it. And you think about Obama's background, climate change, the Chicago Climate Change Exchange with Valerie Jarrett. Those were the people that were directing Obama on how to direct Biden. Have you come across these kinds of special interest connections?
Susan Rice is interesting because Susan Rice bills herself as this expert that she's, oh, she's just a policy expert. She's just a policy wonk. But she is so deeply political down to her very bones. She could live in Scottsdale. She could live on the moon. I don't care where she lives. She's going to be pulling the strings, especially when you have a weekend at Bernie's happening in the White House with Biden on his way out the door. I want to share an anecdote about Susan Rice. In 1994, the Rwandan genocide is happening, and the Clinton administration is debating what they should do about the Rwandan genocide. And at that time, Susan Rice was a lower policy level advisor. And in one of these meetings, Susan Rice steps up, and it's well documented by Samantha Power, who is another left-leaning Democrat. She was an ambassador. She's a Democrat. Susan Rice stood up and said, "Hey, if we call the genocide a genocide and then we don't stop it, what will be the effect on the November election?" And I remember reading about that in grad school, and I just paused because she was this expert. She was supposed to be smarter than everyone. And yet she's actually afraid to call a spade when a million people are dying, all because she doesn't want Democrats to lose in November. And I think that kind of exemplifies all of these so-called experts. The experts, follow the experts, follow the experts. But the experts are just Democrats. They're just Democrats, and they don't actually care about truth. They don't even actually care about justice or any of that. They just want to perpetuate their own power and their own party's interests. So you tell me Susan Rice, and I always have to tell that story anytime someone talks about her because it really shows what kind of person we're dealing with when we go after Susan Rice.
Well, I think it's a personality requirement to get into the inner circle to, first of all, be, if not immoral, amoral. And then also, too, you have to have depraved indifference towards the welfare of others. And I understand when you're president, you're a policy advisor, there's going to be some victims to decisions you make. And sometimes that's unavoidable. But I'm talking about they could care less, just like the Rwanda thing. We're not going to step in because of the blowback on us for the election. That's typical of the personality traits that I'm seeing. I see a lot of similarities with Kamala and Biden, different level. Biden can be managed. He's an empty suit, empty vessel. But Kamala, no real experience, incompetent, corrupt, moldable, will do what she's told to do and never change anything, and she'll spout the party line. I think it's the same MO.
I think so too. I mean, Kamala Harris is the Ron Burgundy anchorman of the Democrat Party. Whatever you put in that teleprompter, she will read. And if the teleprompter goes down, my goodness, we've seen it happen. It is a sight to see when she tries to vamp on her own. But yeah, she doesn't have dementia. She doesn't have Alzheimer's. She is at least moderately intelligent enough to pass the bar to at least do some legal work, right? So she's not completely like book dumb. She's book smart. I don't think anyone denies that. But when it comes to like walking and talking at the same time, doing the things that they don't teach you in the books, she has no street smarts, right? She doesn't have the political instinct. And that's what Democrats rely on, people who are obviously smart enough to get within a couple million votes of the presidency, but just dumb enough to need everyone's help to get that far and to go one step further. So I don't know who is up next. If Kamala is going to run again, I say run her for the next 20 years. Let's just keep running this back with Kamala. She's not the only one like this. And I think we're going to see a lot more willing foot soldiers for Democrats popping out of the woodwork in the next couple of years, getting ready to run again.
As badly as they lost, particularly in the swing states and under some very questionable voting circumstances as well, you would think that they would look at themselves and said, "We got to change course a little bit." I don't see any evidence of that, do you?
No, it's, I mean, I don't know. We're on right now. They're about to certify the results. I don't know what the Democrats are doing. It's been really interesting watching the Democrats do what they accuse Republicans of doing, like challenging the election results, demanding that Congress not certify, even holding protests in the vicinity of Congress. I don't think they're going to learn their lesson. I think that they have convinced themselves that they operate on the moral high ground, and they believe that. So they don't think they're wrong. They just think they haven't convinced the American people that they're right yet. And it's a very selfish way of going about it, and it's pretty stupid. The Republicans, when they lose, at least they have these kind of like look within, see what happened. You get the autopsy after 2012 that I think was bogus. They're like, oh, we need to give amnesty to everyone. That was wrong. But at least Republicans looked inward to try and see what went wrong. Democrats, I don't think that they think they can be wrong because they truly believe they operate on the moral high ground. I mean, just yesterday, Biden is still saying that Donald Trump poses a threat to democracy. Donald Trump just won the popular vote. He won direct democracy. Even if we didn't have the Electoral College, Donald Trump would have won the direct democracy vote. So how can someone who wins more votes than anyone else be a threat? It just makes no sense, but they're so convinced, they're so bought into it. How do you step back from that? How do you admit you were lying? How do you admit you were wrong? I don't see how they could possibly do it and save face.
I think you're raising an excellent point there. Going forward, though, well, let me go back for a second. Have you looked at what the real goals of the people behind the Biden administration, the real decision makers, have you tried to ascertain what they were trying to accomplish?
I think we're seeing a lot of that in the last 30 days. I mean, look at what they're prioritizing. Joe Biden was on vacation, and all of a sudden, Ukraine's getting another like $2.5 billion. Well, he didn't do that from the beach, right? Someone else made that happen. To borrow that Obama-ism, we're seeing trying to permanently ban offshore drilling.
I saw that, yeah.
Does anyone really think that Joe Biden thought that up? No, those are his people in EPA and these other agencies coming up with that. So we're going to see in the last month of what these priorities were. I mean, we know the things that they prioritized, they did, but you can always tell who someone really is when they're about to lose power for at least 4 years. What are they going to try and ram through? And I think if you trace back these executive orders to who would profit from that, who's been calling for that, who's been donating and demanding it, we'll have a much better picture on who's actually calling these shots in the last couple of weeks.
Look, I'm going to go through a checklist with you just to get your reaction because it's right
Okay.
along the lines of what you've written about. And the reason I want to do this is because I think their overarching goal was no more constitutional republic in any form, totally autocratic, aristocratic. This is how I saw them. But let me just give you one theme I kept seeing. I saw elements of a Maoist cultural revolution over and over. Transgender, and I used to work in the mental health profession. We looked at transgenders as people that we needed to help and assist and get through some kind of identity crisis. And that was the general theme. There was no ostracizing them, professionally. But I don't think these people cared about them, but they used them to promote it as a normalcy over the standard normal. And then you look at things like CRT. Okay, you're going into schools and you're labeling one group as racist and one as victims with no individual variability, just total generalization and stereotypes. That's Maoist Cultural Revolution stuff. And to me, that's an element of total regime change. And then we look at destroying the economy by destroying energy because we're energy based. Take it from there. I mean, how do you see
Yeah.
what I'm saying? And feel free to disagree.
No. I think there's a lot of reason. I think it's complete fair comparison, and I'll take it one step forward. You look at what happened in Northern Virginia over the past couple of years, how that swung so far red. I mean, Trump made huge inroads in Loudoun County. Why Loudoun County? Loudoun County has had a massive crisis within their public school system dealing with critical race theory, and also the school district's treatment and policies surrounding transgender students. There were sexual assaults in bathrooms and students being moved around to cover it up. And so, yeah, so you look at the policy about the kind of a Maoist kind of top-down dictatorship. What happened when the parents went to the school board meetings to complain about the critical race theory, to complain about the transgender policies? Biden and his administration had FBI agents in the parking lot jotting down their license plates. I mean, that's where you kind of take it to the next level. Like, everything can be socialist, everything can be communist, but when you actually have government agents taking down the license plates and investigating the parents who dared to go and say, "Hey, this isn't right. We shouldn't do this." That's next level. Like, that's worse than we've ever seen.
Well, I got one level beyond that, and this wasn't isolated. Lady named Sharona Bishop, who's now doing what I do. Are you familiar with her case?
I know her. I've met her quite a bit.
Little Rifle, Colorado, an FBI without a warrant in her hand comes in, kicks in her door, manhandles her teenage daughter on the stairs, takes all their electronics. Husband's a government employee, absolutely no criminal record whatsoever, all because she spoke against CRT at school board meetings.
Well, there's other stuff going on with that. I mean, I used to live in Colorado, and so
I'm
there
from
is a big
Colorado.
effort. There's a big effort. There's a big effort to try and go after everyone, whether it's Tina Peters. There's a top-down campaign to destroy everyone who questioned election results, who resisted and basically blows the whistle and rings the alarm bell about the current administration in Colorado. They want to destroy everyone who stands up against them. And I helped out in those efforts. I had a podcast in Colorado, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to get the hell out of there. Just because you could see it coming. Half the people I interviewed are either in jail or being investigated now.
Well, yeah, I interviewed Tina about a week before she was sentenced. And what a great travesty. And I don't think that Trump is able to pardon her because it's a state
No, you
crime.
can't.
It's a
You're not.
terrible. 70 years old, sentenced to 9 years in prison for doing her job as county clerk and recorder. Unbelievable. Yeah, I
That's the
grew up.
part that they don't tell. That's the part that they don't really tell in the story. She's the county clerk and recorder. It's her job to maintain all of the records. And if the records aren't printed out, the records are on a hard drive, why is it illegal for her to access and possess and print out and download the contents of that hard drive? And why would it ever be illegal for her to stop, allegedly, a company from erasing the contents of that hard drive to get in before them? If these were paper documents, the law would be very clear. She has every right to do it. What they did to her is a travesty.
Well, I grew up in, my hometown is Aurora.
Oh,
And
I lived in Parker.
I looked at the TDA situation in Aurora. I still have family and friends there. And they tell me the TDA stories, the Transnicaragua group from Venezuela. And it's worse than what you see in the media, according to the people I talk to on the ground, including a couple of police officers I know. One of them, State Patrol. And they say it's much worse. And what did they do in the state of Colorado with their liberal leadership? They went after Aurora City Councilwoman Durell Jarinski for telling the truth about what her constituents were telling her. And you're right. It all started in Fort Collins, though, when they made Fort Collins the jewel of the Ickley Empire under Agenda 21. That was the inroad to Colorado. And I was unfortunate enough to be in the wrong place at the wrong time to see it. And it's Colorado used to be a beautiful place to live. It's a hellhole now.
I grew up in New Jersey, and what I always say about New Jersey is the last one out, turn out the lights, because people are fleeing in massive numbers, especially conservatives. I went to Colorado to get away from leftism in New Jersey, and I had to flee Colorado to Texas to get rid of what I left in New Jersey. It's a shame. Colorado is a beautiful place, wonderful people.
Agree.
I think a lot of the problem stems from the legalization of marijuana. And what that's kind of brought into the state. I don't think whether they it should be legal or not, I think Colorado made a lot of mistakes in terms of legalizing that, and that kind of set them down a path that I don't think they can get out of now.
I think it closed the door, but this really started with a Gang of Four and the Fort Collins crew. And they just liberalized the entire state. The Koch brothers had a hand in it. It was just absolutely horrendous what's happened. So I leave there to go to Arizona, where you used to see Easy Rider rifle racks on the back of pickup trucks on I-17. And you go, okay, well, this is freedom here. And now my state is run by the cartel on behalf of the Chinese. We lead the nation in fentanyl deaths. A lot of our legislators on the take from fake real estate deals. And that's from investigations from people that have been RICO investigators telling me this. And so where do I go? There's nowhere to escape these people. See, I agree with your premise. The Democrats aren't going to change. So how do we change the system? since they're so embedded in the system. I mean, they occupy every institution. They're in law enforcement, they're in the courthouses, they're in the legislators. What do we do?
Someone's going to have to go to prison. I mean, after the last 4 years, we've seen them run the lawfare on Trump. And now that Trump's coming in, these same Democrats and the establishment Republicans who were egging them on are trying to say, oh, no, we were just kidding. Let's have a do-over. Let's start fresh. Let's not turn the tables. No, it won't stop until the people who have committed these crimes in office are held criminally and civilly accountable. Due to them, what they tried to make up against Trump, right? I mean, what they accused Trump of doing, they were all doing themselves. So I don't like lawfare. I don't like politicizing the justice system. But at this point, I don't see how the lawfare and how these bad actors ever stop unless they're actually indicted themselves, right? And there's plenty of subject matter. There's plenty of legitimate reasons to go after these people. But you got to do it. And that's the only thing that's gonna do it. Otherwise, you have at the very least a 4 year reprieve. And I guarantee you, if Democrats win, God forbid, in 4 more years, they'll just be right back at it. And you got to hold these people accountable where you can. I think there's a lot you can do with the Hunter Biden laptop. He's been pardoned. But the fun thing about that is he can't plead the fifth on anything now. So anyone else in the Biden crime family who wasn't pardoned, they're fair game. And you've got a star witness who can't plead the fifth. You got to start going after these people. And if you don't, then it's a huge missed opportunity. And yeah, that's the only way I think it ends.
See, Trump made a mistake by not going after Hillary Clinton.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that was his first mistake. I don't think
Absolutely.
he's going to repeat the mistake, but here's another variable, kind of off our talking points, but we have 8 million gotaways estimated. And this is what the Border Patrol even says openly now. I was hearing about this 3 years ago. 8 million gotaways. Now, when you come into the country, Max, you get credit card, $500 room, free transportation to the city of your choice, work permit within 120 days. Why would anyone not turn themselves in unless they don't want to be vetted because they're here for bad reasons? 8 million. My fear is the disruption could be so big that it could paralyze this administration from doing what needs to be done.
Yeah, I write about this in my book, The Conservative's Guide to Winning Every Immigration Argument. You have those kind of two different people, the people who cross the border illegally and actively want to get apprehended because they're going to game the asylum system to force their way in. I mean, I write about it. There's a crazy case of a woman from Central America who claimed asylum on the basis that she liked to wear men's clothes. And in her village, they thought she was like a crossdresser. And she wasn't comfortable there. So her asylum claim was that someone in a village somewhere thought she might be a crossdresser and therefore she's allowed to stay in the United States. This is how broken that system has become. Pretty much anything can be used to get asylum. You can claim to be gay and not be, and that gets you in. So that has to be completely revamped. It should be for actual people facing persecution, oppression, violence, right? Not someone who says, hey, I want to make more money. And then you have the illegal aliens who don't want to get caught. Many of them are previous deportees, right? They've been deported once. If they get caught again, that elevates the crime up to felony level and they go to prison. So obviously they don't want to get caught again, but you also have the criminal elements, the terrorists. We know that more terrorists were caught, more suspected terrorists were caught at the border under Biden. I think all their years combined, it's a crazy statistic. Yeah, the gotaways scare me. The gotaways are why you need the border wall, not for the asylum seekers. The asylum seekers will just walk up to a port of entry or whatever.
That's
But
true.
the gotaways are terrifying because you literally don't know who these people are.
It is frightening. I go back, though, to philosophy. And your linkage to Lindy Lee is so on the money with her observations that this is who they are. They don't care what they did. Because Trevor Loudon did great work a dozen years ago when he took people who were serving in Congress as Democrats and link them to the Democratic Socialist Party that was an arm of the American Communist Party, who endorsed Obama in 2008 and 2012. It's the mindset that's where I'm going with that. Do you see it? Is the mindset that is not revocable? that you can't work with these people?
I think for a lot of them, yes. I think there are some. I suspect we're going to see at least one Democrat flip to Republican. I think you're going to see at least one congressman flip to Republican this year. So I think there are still some. They're a dying breed. They're absolutely a dying breed. It's not all that different from the Republican Party in the sense that you have conservatives on the Republican Party trying to drive their influence, and the moderates resist it. Well, on the Democrat side, it's the opposite, right? The moderates want to drive policy, and the far left say, no, it have to go this
You
way,
got
have to
it.
go this way. So it's, I think we're going to, it's one of those things that's probably going to have to get worse before it gets better. But every single Democrat socialist who gets into power, I mean, just look at AOC, the more they build that brand, the stronger that far left influence becomes, and the harder it's going to be to shake it. I don't think the Democrat Party has the stomach to do to their extreme end of the party what the Republican establishment does to us. I don't think they have the stomach for it. I don't think they have the stomach to kick all of these socialists, kick the squad off of their committee assignments, because then the donor money stops. But ultimately, I mean, they're at a crossroads, and I don't want to. I'm a firm believer: don't interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. So they're gonna have to do what they're gonna do. But if they don't get a handle on this, they will become the Democrat Socialists of America. They're on the precipice right now. Just look at who's winning elections, who's losing elections.
California, New York, Colorado, just as examples, Illinois, they're already there.
Illinois almost went for Trump. Illinois was,
No, I'm not talking to
I
people.
oh,
You know what?
yeah.
Yeah, you
Trump brought
know.
it within 5 points. That's insane. That's insane for Illinois.
I
He
know.
almost beat the Chicago political machine. It's insane. It can be fixed. It can be fixed. You can make things too big to rig. Donald Trump is more popular than he's ever been, but he can't run again in 4 years. So is it JD Vance? I think give him a shot until he proves you otherwise. But the Republicans have to embrace what it actually took to win, as opposed to being comfortable with losing, which is what the GOP establishment always is. They get paid whether they're in the majority or in the minority. And frankly, many of them prefer to be in the minority because then they don't have to do the things they promised to do. And then they keep getting invited to the cocktail parties. So like the Paul Ryans of the world. So if the GOP wants to win, they have to embrace what it takes to win. And GOP orthodoxy will not get them there. It won't.
Well, they won this election. One of the things that I look at, this is just me speaking, the election of Trump fixes nothing. And if we don't step up as a public, we're going to be back to where we were in 2020. What advice would you give to people listening and watching right now that they need to be doing to take our country back?
Well, you got to engage in the process. So many people vote on election day and then they check out. And maybe they come back for the midterms. Most of them don't. Midterms tend to go the opposite direction, not because the president does a bad job, but because people just aren't checked in and the opposition has more of a get out the vote. You got to
Amen.
stay engaged. You got as annoying as it is, as not fun as it is, stay engaged. And that means staying engaged on the issues themselves. I wrote my three books, The Conservative's Guide to Winning Arguments. One, The Conservative's Guide to Winning Every Gun Control Argument. Another, Guide to Winning Every Abortion Argument. And then my third, to winning every immigration argument. I wrote those to try and make a all of the above guide to how to attack every single thing that the Democrats and the left says, because it's all predictable, right? They don't invent anything. They just run the same playbooks back. What's happening with many of Trump's nominees right now are what they did to Kavanaugh, right? They're just running the same playbook over and over and over again. So I'd recommend people get my books, but not because I like selling books, I do, but also because it helps you to make the arguments, to debate and to win the arguments, because you can't check out. You got to be involved in every single fight. There's going to be an immigration fight. Just today, Donald Trump tweeted out or said to a reporter that he's open to talking about the Dreamers. Well, what does that mean? Right? Is that we're hoping to talk about the 530 some odd thousand illegal aliens that got DACA protections under Obama? Or are you saying you're going to legalize the millions more who came in afterwards? right? And then what are you going to get in return? What's the quote unquote compromise? Does that mean completely secure border, no one gets in, fixing all the asylum rules? These are going to be debates. That's going to be the push and shove, the back and forth of what do we do with illegal aliens here now and how do we secure the border? You can't check out, because if you check out and you don't hold Congress's feet to the fire, they're going to give away the store to the Democrats and they're going to give us nothing in return. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden all voted for the Secure Fence Act of 2006.
Yeah.
They voted to build a border wall. And then when we all were done celebrating and went back to our lives, they went into the Appropriations Committee and defunded it. So we have to stay engaged at every single step of the process. It's annoying. It's tiresome, right?
What
But
I'm hearing
the
you
cost of
say,
your liberty is eternal vigilance.
good point, excellent quote. But what I'm hearing you tell the audience, peer-to-peer engagement, mutual education, keep people actively thinking. But I also heard some elements in there about holding your representatives' feet to the fire.
Yeah. So the worst kept secret in Washington, D.C. is that for like every 10 people who call into an office about an issue, that congressional office assumes that there's 1,000 more who just don't have time to call. So a couple hundred people calling a congressional office in a swing district or even maybe a slightly red district, and voicing their concerns about something can literally move the needle on whether that congressman or senator votes for that issue. So yeah, you got to contact your Congress, call, email, believe it or not, faxing them still works, and write letters, because they really do. It might end up just being a check on a tally sheet, right? But at the end of the day, if it's a vote, the congresswoman or senator is going to ask their staff, hey, who called in about this? And if they look at that tally sheet and it's 500 people want them to vote yes and 3 people want them to vote no, it's going to sway them. It is going to help. So you got to hold their feet to the fire. And part of it is also keeping the fair weather or the every 4 years Republican voters engaged on issues. Like maybe they didn't go to the polls because they cared about immigration. And so they're not going to care about the immigration fight that's going to be coming in a couple of months. But you got to explain to them why. How is it that inflation affect that immigration affects inflation? Because it does. How is it that open borders affects housing prices? Because it absolutely does. You want to fix the housing crisis in this country, you deport millions of illegal aliens. Guess what? Millions of apartments and homes and spots in homeless shelters become available for the Americans who need them, right? So you explain how these issues that they might not care about actually affect the things that they do care about. And they say, oh, wow, I didn't think of it that way. And then you tell them, oh, yeah, you call your congressman, email your congressman, write your congressman. And it's infectious. There's an infectious bit to it. And it's what we all have to do, because the fight isn't over. We don't just have to fight every 2 to 4 years. It's an everyday thing.
I agree. Copy, paste, and send. It's not hard to do. I tell my audience that every day. Let's tell people how to get a copy of your books.
Sure. All three of my books are on Amazon: The Conservative's Guide to Winning Every Gun Control Argument, Conservative's Guide to Winning Every Immigration Argument, and Conservative's Guide to Winning Every Abortion Argument, all available on Amazon. I also have a podcast, The Right Guys Podcast, on Rumble, YouTube, and X, if people want to check that out. We do a Monday, Wednesday, Friday thing, talking about different issues, taking comments and things like that. So check that out. Yeah, I've been in this fight for, oh, geez, 10 plus years. How old am I? Yeah, going on 11 years. Fighting this in conservative advocacy, pressuring Congress for things. And it definitely works. It can be demoralizing when special
Yes.
interests beat out the voice of the people, but you'd be surprised at how easy it is to move the needle on things if the people who care about it actually get up and do the work.
It can take time. I got into
It
this
can.
because John McCain, Ted Kennedy, and all the CAFTA people wanted to steal my land and my rural neighbor's land, force us off over time without compensating us by taking away systematically our property rights. 8 year legal battle. That's what got me into this business. I was on enough shows. I eventually got offered a show. And that's what got me engaged. I would tell people, don't wait to be a victim. Don't wait to be a victim. Get engaged. Our guest has been Max McGuire. Max, I want to have you back when we get a little bit into the presidency. I want to talk about the deportation efforts, where it's at, and where you think it should be. I'd like to get your opinion on that. But I want to thank you for being a guest on the Common Sense Show. Very interesting material.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Hello, America. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. And to our friends around the world, particularly maybe our future fellow citizens from Canada, welcome. We're glad you're here. We're all partners in freedom. Hey, we have a great sponsor. Tired of being old? Tired of feeling old? Well, we do have the solution. Collagen is the closest thing we have to the fountain of youth. And by the time you're in middle age, you've lost over half of it. So if you want the age-defying benefits, we recommend that you consume the five right types of collagen. It's a proprietary, unique process to BioTrust, and it does the job. It replaces the lost collagen by crossing the blood-brain barrier. And if you act today, you're going to get 51% off. And just look over here real quick what you get. Joint health, fingernail health and growth, healthy body composition, supports bone health, supports gut health. This is where you want to be. BioTrust. All you got to do is go to healthwithdave.com. That's healthwithdave.com. Take advantage of that 51% discount. Most of us have raised children who they get caught with their hand in the proverbial cookie jar. And they go, I'm sorry, I'll be good, I'll be good, I won't do it again. I had that with my own son who was a model child. Easy to raise, but I heard that phrase more than once. That's right. Well, Mark Zuckerberg is that child. Mark Zuckerberg is trying to sing a new tune. This blue-haired freak, blue meaning political, he thinks he can fool us. He's obviously acting on the advice of legal counsel. And here's what he said. Our interest in trying to remain fair and impartial on Meta, i.e., Facebook, ran into difficulty because we had biased fact checkers. Oh, blame the people you hired. You hired them. You're responsible, Zuckerberg. And he said, we're going to stop this. What do you mean you're going to stop it? We're going to get rid of these biased fact checkers. Really? Can you get rid of bias? Are you still going to have fact checkers? Okay, well, then they're going to be biased one way or the other. But leaving that aside, why is he doing this change of, we're not going to try to tell you what you can and can't say on our site? This is like Al Capone saying, I'm going to go straight and I'm firing all my hitmen. This is what he's doing. So what's Zuckerberg really up to? Well, first of all, legal counsel's gotten him. They said, you got a problem, buddy. The FCC is soon going to be under the control of Donald Trump. And you did him dirty. And he's coming after you. So the only thing you can do right now is mea culpa. Uh-oh, here we go. Section 230. Has Facebook ever allowed child porn? Yeah. Can I prove it's intentional? No, I can't. Not interested in proving it. The fact is, it's there. 230 says this: if you are the director and owner of a website that's social media, and you don't censor, if something accidentally, in air quotes, ends up on your site, you're not going to get prosecuted as long as you make a good faith effort to remove it. But if you're censoring, the game changes under Section 230. You become a publisher. Now you're responsible for everything and anything on your site, and you can go to jail. You can be fined tens of millions of dollars. This is why Zuckerberg has obviously been advised by his globalist attorneys to make a mea culpa statement. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I won't do that again. Do you believe him? Or do you want him prosecuted? Looking forward to your comments.